Blog Talk Radio.
I was sparring with the guy down in South Philly.
here. Oh, on ESPN Classic? Is this, how are they going to have a live fight on ESPN Classic? The Vladimir Klitschko versus Ruslan Chagaev fight.
Yeah, well, I remember there was some controversy with that. Because Chagaev, I was thinking about a few weeks ago, was canceled because Chagaev apparently had a problem with something in his physical. I don't know if it was, because he had, counseled for some form of hepatitis strain in his blood. So the point was, well, the US got canceled. Now, the medical association over there is trying to get this fight canceled.
In Germany?
Yeah.
Germany's like, what the fuck? It's the UFC over there. That's crazy. Hepatitis, that was just a question on Cash Cab tonight. No shit. It's like, what do you get from tattoos and something else? Or what kind of disease can you get? Hepatitis. I got kicked out on that question, too. But Vladimir Klitschko, 52-3 with 46 knockouts. Fighting a 12-round heavyweight championship fight for the time being, anyway, versus Ruslan Chagaev, 25-0 with 17 knockouts, one draw. It's going to be an interesting fight, to say the least. So, Chagaev is a shorter guy, with less reach, but so was Rocky Marciano, talking so much about lately. So, I don't know. His hepatitis doesn't get in the way. Let's see what happens there. It's also an interesting couple of fights on the undercard. We have Michael Sprott, 31-13, versus Alexander Ustinov at heavyweight. And then we have two eight-round fights, one heavyweight, one middleweight, and another heavyweight, six-rounder. So a lot of big boys beating each other up in that card. Also, which is interesting, Ty Fields and other heavyweights will be in action in Canada on Saturday. 41-2 with 37 knockouts versus Nikolai Berthaud, 16-5, 7 knockouts. And the rest of the card is a bunch of question marks, so who knows.
Only the bloody question mark.
Let's see. We go to Saturday over in Poland. Got a good one. Pavel and Roman. Pavel Kolodziej, I guess. Close enough. For the vacant International Boxing Council Cruiserweight title. And, Pavel is 22-0, 12 knockouts versus Roman Krakic. 29-1, 17 knockouts. That's a pretty good fight. And a couple decent ones on the other card, too. And then this one's interesting. Luis Collazo is back fighting at welterweight on Saturday at the Radisson Hotel in Columbia, South Carolina. For Don King Productions. And 29-4 with 14 knockouts, and he's fighting, I'm definitely going to butcher this guy's name, David Gajuchashvili. That's definitely Slovakian or something. He's 9-16 with 4 knockouts, and he has lost 5 of his last 6. So it's not looking good for David. Also, supposedly, looks like Travis Sims is going against that guy you were just talking about, the ever tough question mark. He's 26-1, 19 knockouts. And it's not on the schedule yet, but there's rumors, and there's talk, and I think they've actually maybe even signed something about there's going to be a rematch between Bad Chad Dawson and Glenn Johnson. Have you heard that?
I heard that. I heard that the other day, which actually I found pretty interesting. Heard it was all but signed.
All but signed. That's interesting. Anyway, I don't really see anything else going on here until one thing. There is a pretty good fight over in Pennsylvania at the Icy Light Amphitheater in Pittsburgh. You want to go to that? That's at the Icy Light Amphitheater. I said that. It's a light welterweight fight between Paul Spadafora, 41, and Bo, with 16 knockouts, versus, get this guy's name, Ivan Orlando Bustos, 25 and 12, with 8 knockouts and 3 draws. And Spadafora has 1 draw. And then a bunch of local guys, I guess. Low records on the undercard there. 4-rounders and 6-rounders. So that's the main event. Light welterweight 10-rounder. That's it. Until next Thursday. We'll talk about those fights next Thursday. So let's get Jerzin on the phone. We'll talk to Jerzin. Jerzin is friendly with the old Brick City boxing crew down there in New Jersey, so I'll have to ask him about that. Danny Saratelli. Yeah. You know him?
What was the name again?
Danny Saratelli.
You don't know the name offhand.
He's in New Jersey.
Well, we're getting more, so let me go to my YouTube page. That's where I actually helped. You got it, Saris, and I be friends with the guy that, you know, that's obscure place on YouTube. I found the place with my friend Gerald Nobles when he spoke about you were in Germany. We started talking, and, you know, the guy's like, oh, yeah, like, and he's telling me, like, who the fighter that he works with and stuff. And I'm like, no, do you ever want to get anybody on our show? You know, here's Contact Rich, the guy who wasn't scheduled, and she used my name. And, you know, like, yeah, we're going to turn to our rally. It's your name. I'm like, how the fuck did my name? And then I found out more. Then I get an email from this guy saying, oh, look, we put Jerzin in there, thank you for your help. I'm like, oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, I didn't realize how far the trail went back. It was like almost in January. I was like, whoops, I guess I dropped the ball on that one. I don't know. Missed the earlier emails. I think I had one of them start, so I meant to do something about it, but I don't have any recollection of it. It just came out of the blue all of a sudden again, so, hey. Got it taken care of. We got Jerzin on. And we've got some interesting history. Beat Jeff Lacy in the amateurs. I found out today.
Jerzin's an Olympian. I mean, Jerzin has a very good pedigree. You know, good pedigree.
Let's talk to the man himself. What are we talking about? Jerzin.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich. How's it going?
Hey, how you doing, bro? Hey, Jerzin, it's pretty interesting video here. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man. Can't complain.
So what do you got going on here in your boxing career?
Well, right now things have been a little slow. My last fight was in February. It was kind of out of line. But I'm back in the gym, and I'm supposed to be fighting next month on the 16th of July, so something good for you, at least, for now.
Right. Now, what have you been doing with all the downtime you've had?
Well, I've been in the gym, I mean, here and there, like, you know, I haven't been in the gym consistently, but because I didn't have a fight schedule. But I've still been in the gym, I began my running, and I played a lot of basketball, so I'm always in shape. You know, so when I have a flight coming up, I go to the gym and I'll go and fight and shoot real quick.
Right. Now, I was just mentioning to Tony that you beat Jeff Lacy in the amateurs. You know, talk about that that experience of being in the amateurs and doing so well and you know, bridging the gap to the pros. What's that been like?
Well, I mean, amateur was a great experience for me. I fought a lot of guys. Transitioning from the amateur to the pro was also pretty easy for me until 2002 when I broke my hand on my 13th fight. And it seems like things have gone downhill from then. You know, I broke my hand that time. I was out for 2 years, had to get some surgery. And then after I came back, I lost my first fight coming back. And basically, you know, just, I feel like, you know, things kind of went downhill from there. But I feel like at this moment, things are trying to come together for me. Yeah, a lot of good people around me. You know, so aside from, I'm breaking my hand 5 times, right now, I can't go any clearer than that, I think, except from here.
So has that improved a lot?
Excuse me?
Has that improved a lot since the injury?
The last time I broke my hand was when we went to the UK with the contender team, UK versus USA, and I broke my hand in that fight, which was the fight that I actually wore one hand because I couldn't use my hands after I fell out at all. But after that, I came back, I had surgery, they kind of rebuilt my knuckle, I didn't have a knuckle anymore. And ever since then, I haven't had no problems with my hands. So, like I said, I only have to get better from being, man. I can't get any worse.
Right, no excuses, man.
No excuses at all. No excuses. Even though
the time
that I broke my hand, I never used it as an excuse.
Right, yeah. Well, Tony and I were just talking last week about Uriah Faber in the MMA circles. He broke his hand against Matt Brown. And I don't know if you follow MMA at all, but their last fight, Brown knocked him out pretty early. And this time, Uriah broke his hand and went into the fifth round still. He was using elbows. It was a pretty interesting fight.
Yeah, you figure, people don't really understand, a lot of people don't understand, because see, a lot of people only see fighters, MMA fighters, boxers, they only get to see in the day of the fight, you know, and then we look in good shape, and everybody's got a great shape, but people don't really actually know what went on before those training camps, you know, before training camp ended, they don't know what happened, you know, someone was going to fights, you know, injured ribs, from taking body training, in the gym, someone was good with, you know, with sore hands, you know, different little things that people don't know about, you know, but then we do still fight that way, and then as soon as, you know, maybe if that happens to come out during the fight, people will be like, oh, man, this guy ain't nothing, but they already know for the fight, what happened, you know?
Right.
And that's been my issue with a lot of fights, where I come into the fight not 100% because something had happened or, you know, here and there. And, I'm not right now at the point where I can just cancel a fight. Like, I'm not a big superstar where I can cancel a fight. I would have money where I can just say, well, I've got to cancel this fight. You know, I have a friend that I have to put foot on the table. So even if I get injured, if I have my head and I have a fight and I'm going to make, you know, $10,000, I'm going to take the fight because, you know, I have my skills are pretty good and I feel like I can beat anybody on any given day, you know, but at the same time, I don't feel like I ever feel like you fight like 100%.
Right.
But now I'm feeling like, you know, like I said, I'm feeling like everything's trying to come together for me now at this point.
I've got one question I was wondering to ask you. Let's go more back to your time in the amateurs. You spoke to another gentleman that actually missed out on the Olympics in 2008. He just turned pro immediately. Do you remember the 2000 Olympics he was representing the Dominican Republic? And he chose a decision 2-7 to Paul Miller of Australia. What do you think with the scoring system that's highly criticized for the Olympic Games? I mean, I remember, when I was, first really starting to get into boxing was around the year of the 84 Olympics, and you had a lot of excitement with the guys like Evander Holyfield and Mark Breland, who I knew trained for a while, and a lot of those would come out with Whitaker, Magic Taylor, because it was, similar to a professional style fight. Then after the, screw jobs that Roy Jones, had inflicted on him in Seoul, South Korea, it went to that automated scoring with the computerized and a lot of criticism. And I mean, obviously, in your fight, they're saying only 15 coaches were registered landing. What do you think about, you know, the Olympic scoring and, you know, what would you like to see for it?
Well, I believe that the scoring should be sent back to the whole scoring system, which is just whoever fighting the hardest to hit the most with the fight. Because, you know, my fight in the 2000 Olympics was actually the first fight that started the controversial about the controversial about the points scoring system, because my fight in the first fight, I had 8 points. And I had 7 points at the end of the second round. At the end of the second round. And I went 2 more rounds and I didn't get tired over 1 point. And then he started giving the Australian, which was the guy that I fought in Australia, they started giving him all these points, you know. And then towards the last 30 seconds of the round, they just gave him a point. So, you know, and then he won 8-7. And Teddy Adams is saying he never saw a lot of blow. And, you know, eventually he saw a lot of points scored by me that I never got credit for. And like I said, my fight was the first fight of the controversy that year of the scoring. And I just feel like, you know, the Olympic scoring system should go back to the way they judge the national golden gloves, which is whoever fights the hardest and hits the other guy the most is the guy who's going to win the fight.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100% on there. I was all, when they were getting ready for the Olympics this past year, and they were doing on ESPN, they were showing, you know, a lot of highlights of, you know, past Olympic champions like Ray Leonard and the Spinks brothers, which was in all in 1976, then the fighters in 1984, like I mentioned, Breland and Holyfield, Taylor and Whitaker, and James Moore Jones back in 88, and it was, you know, exciting, like professional boxing. Guys are going out there and they will really put on some good fight. Now it's almost like you have guys that are more, it's more tactical, more proving, like, they shoot you one time and then dance away.
I'm just standing in the gym.
instructional, and one thing I've done there that I explain
not only the proper way to wrap the hand, but then I did a brief tutorial on how Margarito got caught, what he did illegally, and what Coach Trinidad got caught doing back in 2001 before he fought Bernard Hopkins. And what was funny, the same trainer, Nadeem Richardson from Philadelphia, that caught both of the guys. He caught Margarito and he caught Trinidad.
I'm friends with him on the show.
he's a very nice guy, very good friend. But I don't feel at this moment that he's the one that I'm thinking to what I'm trying to get to. Not a shot.
Right.
So I kind of told him, you can stay working on my corner, but I need somebody else to keep the corner. So right now, I'm in the gym, and, Tommy Brooks is there. He's not my trainer, but he's there. He helped me up. Also terrific, which is Kendall Holmes' trainer.
Okay.
So that's all I got to learn from you right now at the moment. So I probably, we haven't sat down and spoke about, talking about my team and, at the end of the day, I believe this is going to end up happening because they didn't know to me. I appreciate that. And what better way to show my appreciation to actually let them come work with Horner? It's been helping me a hell of a lot. That's what I talked about with my trainer before. Before I switched over back to Oscar Suarez, And Terrific, which is Kendall's trainer, he's a technician, I'm a boxer, and that's what he does, He kind of perfects your style. So that's what he's been helping me on.
Now, I'm just noticing you're from Newark here today, and I noticed there was a lot of stuff by Danny Saratelli out there. It's funny, he and I went to UFC 78 at the Prudential Center in Newark, so I've actually been in that building before for a fight, not a boxing match, but MMA fight, and it was pretty interesting, and it was cool to meet him. He's a cool cat. You know him personally?
Yeah, he's a great friend of mine. We used to train in the same gym, the wrestling, closed down.
Mm-hmm.
We used to train there, for years. I always speak to him. He's a really cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
I try to get him on the Tama Dynamag Bobby Gunn undercard.
Right.
Which is July 11th at the Prudential. He has this Polish kid who's coming from Poland. He's gonna play here. It's literally for the Poland. Well, I didn't even know. I just called him, made the match, and I said, "Listen, I want to play that guy. I want to fight the 22 kid." And then, they said to me, "Well, it's not a lot of money for the fight, but I said, they said, Curtis Stevens is going to fight him. He's going to fight for a certain amount of money." And I said, "Well, I'll fight him for a certain amount of money. It doesn't matter to me. How you want to fight him?" And, they said, "Okay, we're gonna put your name in to see what they think of that." Now, Curtis Stevens beat the guy who beat me my last fight. The guy that I lost in my last fight is still Curtis Stevens, last month, and Curtis Stevens beat him. So, I said, "Okay, they're gonna fight me instead of Curtis. I mean, I just lost the guy, and Curtis didn't beat him. So, none of them picked me." So, I'm gonna call the same day, about 2 hours later. Regulator told me, "Hey, you got the fight. You're gonna fight you." I said, "Okay, cool." Got back in the gym the same day. And then about 2 hours later, I got another phone call from Regulator. "So, Jason, they don't want to fight you anymore. They want to fight Curtis Stevens instead." I said, "All right." I'm guessing the guy is probably a boxer.
Yeah.
And they probably want somebody who's done in front of them. And that's Curtis Stevens, because I'm a boxer myself, and I'm a boxer puncher. And that kid was 22 and 0 with 7 knockouts, which means he don't have a lot of power, So maybe that they want somebody he can have a circle around, and that's Curtis Stevens, I'm thinking. Because I spar with a Thomas Adamek plenty of times. And I'm his coach, and the same kid's coach. So I would see how he would not want to fight me. Because me and Adam, I go out of this, but we don't.
You don't pussy foot around, huh?
I'm not around.
The fight that you had fought last, Don Newton, I had actually covered one of his fights where he stood down in Atlantic City. He fought the draw that, it's a draw. And I'm looking at some of the guys on his record, and, he fought, he has a win over a fighter named Malik Smith. But Peter John, he had a hell of a time, and it's recently lost to Peter Manfredo. But Jared was definitely 4-3. He was a, pretty tough fighter out there. That was a fight race of 40 for
you. Yeah, I mean, the guy, I can't say that he got it a lucky shot because we don't fight. Us fighters, we don't fight to that lucky shot. We start to win. So, if I caught somebody, if I was in a fight and I caught somebody with a shot, I knocked them out. It wasn't a lucky shot because that's what I was going for. Now, see, I was beating him with all the square cards, and so the medals, which is one of the reasons why I live, not only that, but one reason why I don't really want to even be in my court anymore is because he told me when I went back to the last round, and I'm fresh, I don't even plan on even bringing it on. And moving was, if you see his face during the summer round, he was like about to give up, about to quit, like he couldn't take it anymore. I don't have problems with this guy with my job, and I'm laughing that he's just with a pen that he's about to give up. So I went back to my corner, and Noah told me, you got to take this guy out of the time real close. So I'm like, all right. So I'm like, okay, I know I'm out of the scorecards, because the fire was known. But they know somebody who's going to train that time, so I went out and I tried to train with him, and he called me with a shot to the cousin. And I went down, and I thought it was good to be trying to continue and finish the fight. But the ref said I wasn't, if I ended. But even afterwards, when he went out, to all the police officers that were out there, patrolling the area, the potential, he happened to go out there and start telling some of the officers. And all the officers know me in New York. So he happened to start telling to this one lady officer that knows me, that's actually my friend. And he said, man, I know he was beating the shit out of me or whatever. But he never was throwing his right hand, so I kind of noticed that. So I just started throwing hooks, and I cut him with a hook. He was going to fight. So, that's another thing that mentally, I guess I didn't even notice I wasn't throwing my right hand, and I thought I was.
Sometimes you forget.
Yeah, you got some of the fives in my right hand that I think it's kind of like Paulie when he tried it. He wasn't throwing his right hand, but he wasn't noticing what he was throwing.
Yeah, he got surgery here in my neck of the
woods. That was my problem.
You have to get like a super specialist up here in Massachusetts to fix his hand.
Six off here was another
matter. Tony likes to talk about that episode. You see that when they had to cut his hair? That one fight?
I actually missed that fight.
That's rough. Yeah. I met Buddy McGirt up here at the Roxy in Boston one time, and I didn't even know it. I was trying to interview his fighter who was like 4-0, this little kid named Dat Nguyen. And I go right up to Buddy, he's got the sunglasses on, the rings, he looks like he's a big shot. And I'm like, can I interview your guy? He reaches out his hand, he's gonna shake my hand, I'm gonna go ask for his autograph. I'm like, can I talk to that guy? Later on, somebody's like, that's Buddy McGirt. I'm like, what?
Yeah,
I didn't even recognize
him. Well, he's getting a lot of money.
He's a funny guy, though. There's a guy you'd probably love to train here if you want to go to Florida. If that's where he trains this guy.
No, I actually got offered to train him at one point. George, he actually offered Bobby Gunn.
Baby, there you go. You gotta keep your hands up. Concrete chin, you know, and he would keep coming forward, and that's what Bernard would want.
slow plodding punches. They're quick pitch pad punches. And Hopkins just couldn't keep up the pace with them. And Roy Jones he struggled with because Jones didn't use a lot of footwork. But when it was those guys that were straightforward, the Trinidad, the Pav legs, Glenn Johnson, Hopkins had a field day. Against Juan Eccles had a field day.
I don't know if you
read Brain Magazine at all, but every month they have like a picture tutorial on something new and Hopkins does it with the proper way to throw a jab, but then you can show the wrong way to do it and how you can counter the proper way to slip a punch, everything. I have a girl that I'm training now, she's going to have her first fight next year, but I always joke that I said, Lord, Bernard Hopkins is your co-trainer. Every month I make her read those. I said, because Bernard Hopkins is showing you how to, you know, stuck under a punch, keep your hands up, and fire combinations, without losing your balance. I said, he's your co-trainer. But I said, don't tell him that because then he'll want to cut out of the money we're not making.
Alright, well, anybody you want to thank or give a shout out to or anything, Jason?
Thanks a lot once again for having me.
MMA's got their share of events too this weekend.
Obviously, it's a big one.
Remember last week we were talking about the Reincarnation Team Sylvie fight and then how she was trying to respond? You see?
I did see it, of course. I put a blog out on it. It was so good. And I wish I could see the official taping version. I can't believe it's not out yet. You know, we got the audio.
I've only seen like the versions on YouTube.
Yeah, that sucks. You know, it's like such a good punch. You want to see that in slow motion. You want to see it, you know, from 9 different angles. And they've got the freaking guy with his head in the way of the main video that's out there. It sucks.
And the one guy's laughing, which I was thinking of. The guy laughing was actually kind of funny. Like I said, I'm on those YouTube now, and it's like everything on there is like just like kind of far away from the show. All you can see is like where's your face and it's kind of the right hand.
It's funny too, because like he must have known how powerful that shot was, and where. Well, maybe he didn't know where it landed because I think he ducked his head down and maybe looked at the ground when he hit it. But you know, he obviously fired a right hook. This is what it looks like. And then he went for the takedown right away. So he was thinking MMA, which is interesting. You know, because he lost to Kimbo in the MMA fight, but they slugged it out beforehand. I was watching some of that highlight reel today from Kimbo versus Mercer, and I kind of forgot how much of a fight he put up before he got choked out. But Ray was funny, and not I guess it shouldn't be funny, but you know, he was taking it really seriously at the press conference. You know, and he was like, I don't know if you saw that video, but I found a video of the Tim Sylvia versus him press conference where they actually explained that, you know, the Philadelphia Commission, or some guys from Philadelphia actually, called up Monty Cox and said, you know, this isn't going to fly, we've got to do an MMA fight. So that's why it got changed, but Tim Sylvia made a fool of himself because he just sat back and acted all casual, like it was going to be nothing special. He had other people telling him if he beat Ray, he was going to be able to do some other stuff for professional boxing. So he blew his shot to change careers, you know, if he ever was really going to take that seriously. And, man, the knock the fuck out. That was awesome.
Yeah, right now, the only thing is that I'm on YouTube now. I've got one video, let's say, that I can't get in the way. Another one kind of far away. Then I found one that's like almost right out the cage. It's not professional.
Really?
If somebody wants to like sit like front row,
they
got it on there, and it's actually pretty good to keep nobody in the way.
Well, definitely have to check for that now. You mentioned it. All right.
Right now.
I got all kinds of stuff going on my computer. Funny, every now and then my mouse stops working. I have to unplug it and plug it back in and hope the green light stays on.
Well,
that's what we're shooting for.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we have to stop the show late. And it sucked because, like, it was just starting to work right, the sound situation. Like, I had this driver issue with my sound. It would go out every now and then on everything. Now it only goes out on Skype every once in a while. But it's only since I installed the new Skype, which I'm thinking was a mistake. I should have just stuck with the old Skype. But anyway, make a long story short, it just started to work. Like, when I would have to reset it for the sound not working on Skype, I wouldn't have to go through the whole reinstalling the sound driver again. Because it just today, twice in a row, when I had to reset it, it didn't require me to reload the software, but it would still conk out. So I was like, what the hell? I just really think it's getting better. It doesn't give you the whole enchilada there. But anyway, we got some MMA events to talk about here. I just want to go through some stuff real quick here. And we got plenty of time. We have the Ultimate Fighter finale show going on the 20th here. At 9 on Spike TV for free, so you get to watch it, Tony. I know you're going to be first in line.
Yep.
Clay Guida versus Diego Sanchez is the main event. And Clay's known for his slugging on the feet style, so you might actually enjoy this fight. And Diego's more of a, he likes to strike and stand up, but he's more of a kicking, you know, karate style type of fighter. And Clay is just all in the fists and blocks a lot of shots with his hair. He's always entertaining, always. They call him the carpenter. He hammers people. And then we have DeMarcus Johnson versus James Wilkes. Wilkes is on the Ultimate Fighter show from over in the UK. Johnson, I don't know. Looks like he was one of the guys on the show, too. I haven't watched too much of it, but those guys are fighting. Wilkes is 6-2. Johnson is 14-6. Those guys are fighting 170. The Carpenter versus Nightmare fight, the main event, that's at 155. And then we have Chris Lights Out Lytle, who's familiar to Fight News Unlimited. We just had him on a few months ago. He's 36-17-4, fighting Kevin Burns, who's 8-2. So maybe he's gonna have a pretty good shot of beat Burns up. Burns looks like he needs to get beat up. He's got that look like he's surprised to be having his picture taken for some actual fighting here. I don't know. Maybe he'll prove me wrong, but. Got that deer in the headlights look in the picture on UFC.com. And we also have a couple other guys from the show. This is the big fight, Ross Pearson versus Andre Winner. And Ross is 10-3, and Winner is 10-2. So it's a really pretty good fight. And we have Joe Daddy Stevenson versus Nate Diaz. And I know that Nick Diaz has come out of nowhere and put together some real impressive back-to-back victories. So we'll see if his brother's working just as hard and can beat up on Joe Stevenson, who's a real veteran of the sport. And this one, I think, might actually even be the technical main event when all is said and done. I think this is going to be the fight of the night. I know these guys really like to fight, too, even though you can never discount Clay. I think Diego might be that much better. But he just might throw a head kick and end it in the first or something. Whereas I think this Nate Diaz fight is going to go the distance. And it's going to be nothing but crazy action. Also on this fight, guy you haven't heard from in a while, Melvin Guillard versus Gleison Thibault. And Guillard is 40-8 in MMA. I've never seen this kind of a record on a UFC card. 40-8. 40 wins and 8 losses. Usually, you guys get that many fights, it's tough to give them the credit. Nobody gives them all the credit for those that many fights. But here it is right on the UFC.com page. His record, that's 40 wins, 8 losses, and 3 draws. And Gleason Thibault is no slouch either. He's got 29 wins and 5 losses. And that's at 155. So we'll see. That should be a good fight, too. That might steal the show. And we have Brad Blackburn versus Edgar Garcia. That's at 170. Mike Sisnalevics versus Thomas Drywall. Drywall? Gorilla?
Sisnalevics.
I'm sorry.
I recruited him to the boxers.
Oh, there you go. So he's going to knock him out?
Well,
Mike's doing a pretty good record. He's got more wins than Thomas. And we'll see if he can make the television.
Recover, you know, with a chance to put out a favor 3. He goes,
was nasty. It was like it's just instant injury from
it. Yeah. And it was funny. They keep telling me this a matter of 20 minutes before we went to the final show.
That's crazy. Another guy we had on the show before, way back when, maybe even before you were around, Jason Dent, fighting Cameron Dollar. And we talked to him way back before he even had anything to do with the UFC. And he's an interesting guy. He works real hard at what he does, so we're rooting for him. Cameron Dollar is a weird dude. He's kind of a out there guy on the show. It's funny, they had one episode that I watched where he was like talking about how he's always scared to fight. Like, that must be rough, like, as a fighter, like, scared to death to fight. Every time. Like, it's, you know, it's common to be nervous before a fight, but he's, like, literally like, scared. Like, petrified of fighting. And he does it for a living, so it's kind of weird. But he's all right. He's a good fighter. And he's going to give Dent a run for his money. Dent had a lot of criticism from Dana White after his first fight wasn't too good. And then his second fight, he was more competitive, and it wasn't good for him. I think he lost, but it was a very close slugfest, so he really impressed everybody. And then now he's fighting this Cameron Dollar. He's like bottom of the card here. The only other fight we didn't mention was Nick Osipczak versus Frank Lester, and he's the guy famous for spitting his teeth out in the trash bucket after one of his fights on The Ultimate Fighter. So we'll see. You know, he does. But I am looking more forward, not to the close of this Ultimate Fighter, but to the opening of the next Ultimate Fighter. And that's why, as I mentioned earlier, I was looking at some Kimbo Slice clips today. And just thinking about, obviously, the house atmosphere more than the fighting. Although, I think I'm betting that Kimbo is going to raise some more eyebrows and take this really seriously and compete. You know, a lot of guys think he's just a bum, you know, it's all hype just because of that one fight, you know. And you can't judge a guy by one fight. I mean, I don't think anybody said Kimbo wasn't tough because he lost the one fight online to that Boston cop, you know.
Right.
Everybody gave the cop more credit than to say that Kimbo was overrated because of that. So I don't understand why now, because he just, you know, he's credited with destroying the whole organization with one loss. You know, he's the bum all of a sudden. I think he's going to disprove that theory. And he's not going to win, maybe. You know, I can't say he definitely won't win, but I don't think he'll win. But at the same time, I think he's gonna be like glue to the UFC after this, no matter what. He is gonna be a career UFC guy, and that interests me because I think he's got a lot to learn, and he's gonna be a very interesting fighter. And I think it's a lot better idea for him to continue doing that than to go into boxing. Because, like you said, I don't think he's going to get away with that beard, and Kimbo's not the same without the beard.
Right.
So, anyway, but no, that's not really the reason. The reason is I think he's a good fighter at heart, and he's got natural skills, and like Joe Lozon was saying, we had him on not too long ago, a couple weeks ago now, you know, he's a natural athlete, too, so, you know, if he just sticks with one thing and then takes it seriously, he might take off and might be one of the best fighters we've ever seen. Might end up fighting Brock Lesnar someday, taking the fight from him. Who knows? I'd like to see that fight right now. Brock Lesnar versus Kimbo. I don't know. I'll watch that tomorrow.
I think Kim Brock is going to, you know, the best that was the Frank here coming up. That first fight, he's just so over aggressive. He's pounding on here, but he just, you know, let himself be caught, you know, by making the over-aggressive mistake and like seeing himself open for a leg lock. I think this time, you know, that size and that strength advantage, it knows how to, you know, fight with a better nail, with a better technique. He's a very dangerous guy.
Yeah, I mean, you consider the size of his arms, and, you know, you don't even really have to put a lot of pressure behind those little hammer fists that guys like to throw. And he got some damage. I mean, like, he's the only guy I've ever watched and seen him throw hammer fists and went to myself, wow, I wouldn't want to be hit by those. You see a guy throw a hammer fist, you're like, oh, it's not even hurting the dude. know, why even bother, you think? But when he throws him, it's like, ooh, that's gonna hurt. It's rough. But we got a couple of other MMA events. We don't want to give the UFC too much of this show here. They got enough press. We got to go to the MMA Big Show over at Belterra, Indiana on the 20th. For the Conviction. It's going to be their show. Now, there's only two fights here listed. I'm sure there's probably going to be more. This is at the Belterra Casino Resort in Indiana. And we have Roger Bowling versus John Copenhaver. I'm going to say five rounds. That must be an MMA Big Show title fight. Also listed is Joe Ammerman versus Joe Scarola. I don't know about either of those guys. I know Copenhaver's a big name. Heard his name before. And then there's no fight found on the schedule here, but it's worth mentioning. Over in Illinois, there's a card in Lakemore. The Extreme Fighting Organization, XFO 30 Genesis, is going on at 4 p.m. on the 20th. In Lakemore, Illinois, at the Lakemore Banquet Facility. Can't say too big a leak if they're at the banquet facility. But anyway, if you're in the neck of the woods and you want to stop by and see no fights found, you can go over there. And as we mentioned, the whole UFC Ultimate Fighter finale is going to be in Vegas, of course. Then we also have a Strikeforce event, show MMA Strikeforce Challenger Series going on this weekend on the 19th, which is tomorrow. Strikeforce Show MMA Strikeforce Challenger Series. It's, yeah, I'm losing. Kent, Washington is where it's going to be at, and they only have one fight on this thing here. I know we've got a bunch of stories out on this whole card, but the one fight listed on here is, of course, the main event between Joey Villa Sr. versus Evangelista Santos. And Evangelista is the husband of, crap, you know? Just realized. Evangelista Santos is the husband of Gina Carano's ex-opponent, Cyborg. Santos. Gina Carano was actually on a conference call, so I said, oh, damn, today, that I totally forgot about. I could have asked Gina Carano a question today. But, you know, their fight is going to be, now that I mentioned that too, I should mention their fight's going to be 5-minute rounds for the first time in MMA history that I know of. Have main event both women's fights on that card. Shayna Baszler is fighting Sarah Kaufman on that next big Strikeforce card, not the Challenger Series, but the big deal, which is also on our blog. But there's blog stories up about this one with all the other fights. And this is Cyborg Santos' husband, Evangelista. So, and Joey is nicknamed Smokin' Joe, Villa Senor. Or his left hook. So, it might be one you want to watch too. Events, there's a King of the Cage event too. A few guys on that. I don't recognize, but one's a title fight. So, it's Chad Herrick versus Tony Lopez. Two title fights. And then Brad Bark versus Brandon Hunt. Both 5 rounds. Three. Those 5 rounds too. Tony Harvey versus Lazar Stojadinovic. How about that one? That's going to be in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. King of the Cage Encore. And that's pretty much it for the schedules that I know of. Let's see if we can find some other stuff to talk about in a little new search.
The only thing I really wanted to mention before we went off the air tonight was the fight between Juan Manuel Marquez and the returning Floyd Mayweather. That will be happening July 18th. Floyd tore cartilage in his rib cage in a training session. So we're going to have to wait until at least sometime in the fall for that. Hopefully September, maybe even a little later, just depends on when Floyd can come back to training.
training. And I just got my latest episode of Issue of Ring magazine, and they were doing, you know, breakdown of the fight, and I didn't get to read the whole thing, but when it came to the outcome, they were pick a Floyd to win by a very narrow decision. You know, they were saying, you know, Marquez is going to make a really tough for him, and Floyd's going to have to rally down the stretch, you know, to win. And what actually made me laugh more about it than anything was comments made by Floyd's father, Floyd Sr., about a week ago. And I don't think, I may have mentioned it all year last week, I don't remember when I got the press release. But, you know, Floyd Sr. being, you know, the, and you don't know how I feel about Floyd Sr., being, you know, the egotistical J.R.J. that he is, he came out and said, the fight with Marquez is going to be a joke. It's going to be basically reminiscent of the Floyd Mayweather Arturo Gatti fight from a couple years ago, where, you know, Floyd pretty much dominated Gatti over six rounds before they stopped it. And he's like, yeah, Marquez, you know, he's not that good. He's a lightweight. Floyd's going to tear him apart. He's not even going to be competitive. And he's basically telling people not to buy the fight. He's just going to be taking money out of Floyd's fingers and hands. One thing that I never understood about this, Rich, and I like that, I may have said it last week, but I think I've mentioned, it's worth mentioning again. If two guys are going to fight, me and you are going to fight, we're going to have a fight for the national title, and the nationals. And my trainers come out and say, oh, this fight's mismatched, Rich Bergeron, the bum, he doesn't even deserve to be in the same ring, he's a bum. Well, you know what, if I win that fight, what it's really proved, I beat a ball. But if I lose, how good could I have really been? Even if I was fighting for the national title, even if I was fighting on a pay-per-view card, did I really deserve it?
So then you mentioned that.
I am picked by a ball.
I punched in boxing into a Google News search, and sure enough, the first thing that pops up is from the examiner.com. Second thing that I said about a Philly boxer. Third thing that pops up is Mayweather's lack of credibility in the haunting former boxing team. 3 hours ago. That's got to be an interesting article about we'll see if we're gonna see if Manuel can do what the guy on the commercial does to Floyd with the internet. In that commercial? That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I love it when he throws the fake punch at him after it.
What was the thing on the Philly Boxer?
Philly Boxer is U.S. champ at 16 with bright future.
I saw someone deeper in the other day. I need to read the article, though.
Well, it's online. Billy Boxer, U.S. champ at 16, with a bright future. Miguel Cartagena wasn't born on the 4th of July, but the surprise winner of back-to-back national boxing championships didn't miss by much. So, he wasn't a collegiate boxer, though, so we're not going to talk about
him.
That's true. Anyway, also on boxing, since we're there, I'm going to go with a couple of crazy MMA stories in a minute, but Boxing Hall of Fame inductees from 2009, last Sunday, to the Hall of Fame, Lennox Lewis was number one on the list, and we had the other six, Brian Mitchell, Orlando Canizales, Bob Goodman, Akiko Honda, Hugh McElhaney, Tony's favorite guy, and my favorite guy in the whole wide world, Larry Merchant. And he also got the BWAA award, too, for Christ's sake.
Certainly, you're Larry Long.
Oh, yeah, I would have had a big sign.
As much as Larry Merchant pisses me off, I think he does boxing. You pop it sometimes, it's a little overblown. But the man knows boxing. I'll give him that.
Okay.
He grew up, you know, the staple of his mouth stuff. I mean,
really?
The guy, I mean, not much even really knows boxing, but he goes into an interview and he's rude as shit to everybody. And one of my favorite things a couple years ago, he does a lot of interviews at Showtime and, you know, other, you know, sports venues, not just boxing, and he was supposed to do an interview with Pete Rose. I'm going back about 9 or 10 years ago, and he was really nasty to Pete Rose in this interview. I mean, people were like, how could a person be so rude and still be employed? And about a couple months after that, like Tyson was fighting on Showtime, you know, this is when he was taking some fights on pay-per-view, and he was doing still some fights on Showtime. And this may have been when he, it wasn't when he knocked out Luis Severis, but it was, maybe when he knocked out Julian Francis, I'm not sure. And Jim Green did an interview on him. Like Tyson goes, not to you, apologize to Pete Rhodes on the air. And he made Jim Gray on the Showtime cameras apologize to Pete Rhodes, definitely Tyson did the interview. Which is great. I mean, here's the perfect Jim Gray is right now. Did you see the fight a few months ago between Carl Froch and Jermaine Taylor?
No, I did not.
It was a very good fight. You know, Taylor was ahead on the cards. Froch rallied in the 12th round, knocked Taylor down. Taylor got up and Froch covered him with about like 15, 20 seconds to go. Taylor went slump on the rug. The referee stopped the fight. Froch wins. So they interview Taylor and they're like, and Jim Gray's like, so, what was up to your mind at the time of the stoppage? And Taylor's like, well, you know what to say. And the Ring Magazine is blasting Gray for this. What do you expect the guy? Isn't the guy practically unconscious? So what the hell's going on at that moment?
Yeah, right.
What's up with his mind? There's nothing going on with his mind.
It's kind of Larry Merchant, I found a Floyd Mayweather MySpace page, or some tribute page, or some page claiming to be the official Floyd Mayweather site, and the first video on there is that interview that Larry Merchant did with him. Floyd went off on him, which I thought was funnier at the time than I do now. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, shut up, Floyd. But back then, I thought that was great. This whole comeback thing is it's yet to be seen whether it's going to be successful for him. But the last thing I saw on him was that he was wrapping his gym in an American flag. I didn't hear anything about his training camp or how well he's doing. So I don't know. We'll have to see when he actually fights, maybe. But the welterweight division is still where it's at, as far as I'm concerned. There's so many good fighters in there. I'm looking at this whole boxing thing with a new eye now because I'm trying to come back to boxing myself. I put out a couple videos, as you know, and I haven't put myself publicly on the blog yet. But soon enough, I will get to the actual gyms in Brockton. Right now, I'm giving myself 2 weeks from this past Monday, so I got a week and a half left at most here to, end of June, pretty much, is when I'm going to get myself in the gym with a trainer and seriously thinking about at least another amateur go to see where I go and then go pro, but ultimately to go pro before October, if I can. So I'm going to put myself through some crazy stuff. I've already been hitting the bag like crazy, and I've got a guy who's going to be working with me who is a Petronelli, member of the Petronelli family.
Sure.
Tony Petronelli, so I can't go wrong. Right. And, you know, as we know from last week's show, you've got all these characters in Brockton that I could benefit from. I mean, just in one little bar, we got Pit Perrone on the phone, a guy who's a legend of the sport. I sent you some links about him. I didn't read too much about him, but you know, he's a legendary trainer, I guess. He's been around a while and still doing it. And you know, you got guys like Hampton in the bar over there, and Richie Campiello strolling in off the street, who's one of the big promoters around town. And his brother, Mike Capriello, runs the Rocky Marciano gym in town. So, I mean, it's just boxing everywhere you look sometimes. And I'm itching to get in with that crowd and really start training and show these guys that I might actually have a shot here to do something with this. I'm really feeling it again. And I finally, like I said earlier, my pinky, I had that broken pinky I was always talking about. It's finally completely gone. No side effects or symptoms from that. That's completely healed, ready to go. So I don't have any excuses. I'm just going to get out there and start running, get back into wind shape. And then just, keep it in my new bag. I think that's going to be my secret weapon, my new bag. If you haven't seen the videos, check it out just for that, because this is something that might be a key tool in every professional boxer's arsenal someday, because I'm going to try to patent it. But it's been instrumental for me. Tony was just saying earlier, right, he had the hand problem with the heavy bag. And nice thing about this is it's the best combination of a timing bag and a heavy bag. Because it gives, it's got the straps on it, the bungee cords, so that it gives you some spring back at you. I know it's a new incarnation of the one that I got. It doesn't headbutt you as much. So that doesn't help your defense as much as it used to. But it's still good because, you get the thing bouncing back at you and you have to compensate for that. You have to work around it. And you have to think fast, and you have to move fast. And as you know from boxing people, and as we both know, hitting a moving target is very hard. When you hit the heavy bag, it's never going to stand in front of you. It's never going to really move around unless you're hitting it, and it's in motion. But, this thing moves around on you. Granted, it stays to a confined spot, so it's still not like a real fight in that sense. But, it gives you a little bit of a head target, smaller than the body, so... It's a lot harder to hit the head. And then the body part of it is just heavy enough so that it's not going to hurt your hand if you hit it really hard, but it's still, you're going to feel it. You're going to know that you really hit it hard. There's going to be that real pop. And, it's going to really register on the thing. So I think I got something here. We'll see what I can do with it. There's a couple weird MMA stories I want to mention. The latest celebrity to get into MMA is Shaquille O'Neal. I'm just going to play this little clip.
Welcome to sixlevels.com. Six Levels training facility is for everyone.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Well, there's also this little clip here that I found about MMA coming to Philadelphia on August 8th, UFC 101. You going to be on to that? At the Wachovia Center?
I've never had a chance, I've been like pulling a crappy job, and
I'm like kind of alone. I've never been a great job. I don't have a good education. I'm trying like this one sport, but I'm not really doing very good. People are laughing at me. But you just want that one shot. If you can make the one shot, the right button gets pushed and you have a chance. I mean, I know it's like anytime you get a ring, and the perfect example was Buster Douglas. Buster Douglas, it was like he was the Rocky in that movie. So, but instead of going the distance, he knocked Mike Tyson out. But it was like, he was a guy that, you know, was kind of pulling him out of vanity, and he just was not doing very good, you know, and he was being written off. And they said, you're going to get a shot at the champ, and everybody goes, oh, this is going to be a joke. And the whole, you know, thing going up to this fight was, Douglas is training hard, and Tyson is over in Japan, you know, so doing posing with sumo wrestlers and posing with these people and that people. And it was like, he was like the Charlie Creed. Like, all I got to do is show up and I'm going to drop this guy in about a round and a half. And Douglas is like, I'm going out, you know, to win and I'm going to train hard. And it was a 42-year-old dog and it was like, he wins the fight. That was like a Rocky movie, you know, in real life. And people can identify to that. People can identify, you know, saying,
especially now, too, like the scene where he gets laid off from the meat factory, you know, it's very relatable now. And that's one thing I noticed, like, when he's boxing in the basement, that basement scene, it's like, you know, there's nothing else in the basement except for that boxing bag and, like, a couple other things. And it kind of reminds me of one of the old places I used to live when I watch it, you know, Adrian sits down on the bottom step and, you know, that whole dialogue scene is one of the classics, just the way they set it up. And one of my favorite lines in that whole movie is when he's like, hey, Slamass, stop being a woman. You know, I gotta fight. He was just a very simple character, but it was also believable that he wasn't that smart because of the punches that he took, you know. Just a dumb luck kind of a guy. But he had skill too, a little bit of skill. But it's kind of a shame to me that they didn't do that better and they didn't, you know, try to be more pure boxing with it, the fighting scene.
Well, I think that the first one was like, you know, it was more of the background story was the story, you know, guy, you know, down on the block, by himself, never had a chance. And not only was he only had a chance, you know, to fight for championship, you know, it's an unknown in his hometown, and how the people really took to him. It was also the background story, you know, him meeting the girl, the shine, and that. Well, it was more build-up scenes, the actual training fight scenes. It was, you know, more building towards the fight. And when they did like 2 and 3, they're like, okay, we got to put more action in there now, because we know the build-up part of it now. We know where these guys come from. Now we got to do a lot of action. I assume they did some build up with, you know, him failing, you know, and trying to do commercials to sell. And him struggling financially, this and that, but they still had to put more action in there. And you'll see, if you go back to, you know, 1 and 2, 1 is very limited when the fight games are 2, with, you know, a lot more concentration on the actual fight.
Yeah, but I remember one time I had a creative writing teacher who told me that, or I told the whole class actually, that the Rocky movie was so popular because nothing that graphic had ever been done before the first Rocky was made, and that pulled a lot of people in as far as the fight scenes, you know. So, sorry about that, folks.